Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for a wonderful Wednesday morning. I'm Sanka Price, your host for today's program, which concludes at 2 p.m. today. Our operator and producer is Mr. Graham Vaughn. Our call numbers are 4341790, and you can reach us on WhatsApp at 266-4862. There's a lot going on today, and I think one of the main things that most Barbadians are concerned about is the fact that the Supreme Court is not sitting. Well, not even sitting. It's not even opening. So we have a situation where a lot of the work that needs to be done at the registry and whatnot is not being done. And that is certainly not a good thing to happen. And we had a situation last night where the Bar Association came out and they told their membership not to return to the court until a meeting is held with the Attorney General or the Chief Justice or both. We have on the line the President of the Bar Association, Mrs. Lizelle Weeks. Mrs. Weeks, are you there?
I am.
Good morning to you. Welcome to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, and thank you for the call.
Good morning. I want you to just outline to the public your major concerns in terms of not returning to the Supreme Court and how that, well, let's first of all look at your main concerns.
Well, there's so many. I don't know what order to put them in. Obviously, the courts sit and the registry functions to facilitate certain very necessary services and the provision of certain very necessary and some of them constitutional services to the members of the public. And if the courts aren't working, then those services can't be provided. So on the registry side, while attempts, and I have to say this as a preface to every other comment that I'm going to make in relation to this, there were attempts to try to ameliorate what is now turning into a very uncertain and potentially chaotic situation over at the registry and the courts. There were temporary arrangements being made in relation to the records department so that you could perhaps register a birth or a death. But after meetings with the union and their representatives, the union members and representatives, decisions taken changed. And so all of the ameliorating steps that were put in place fell into a state of uncertainty and chaos. And consequently, simple services such as birth and death registration, for example, can't happen. And other functions of the registry, filing the initiating of actions, filing of any document that is required, pleadings required in any matter that is currently on before the court, any deadline that is to be met by any party to any action is now in jeopardy of being exceeded because there is no facility to allow for the filing of those documents and the compliance with those deadlines. And obviously, on the court side, if there is no staff to assist in the carrying out of the functions of the court, it's going to be very difficult for the courts to sit and hear matters. Very simply, the court clerks are responsible for pulling the files upon which the courts would adjudicate on any given day. If the staff isn't working, the files aren't going to be available. So notwithstanding the judiciary's willingness to sit, which is commendable, and I understand why they would want to continue to sit, because the court executes a very, very important function and should never, ever be brought to a screeching halt. So I understand why they want to continue to sit, but without the staff, it's impossible for them to further the business of the court, because very simply, and the experience was had yesterday, where judges were willing to sit, attorneys had actually gone into the building, but the judge had no files because there was no staff to pull the file so that the court can actually sit. So all of these issues compound what had already been circulating in the public domain about the efficiency of the courts as they function or dysfunction, as some people would say. And the truth is, this set of circumstances just further compounds that, and it's really not in the interest of anyone at all, not any of the users of the court, none of the participants in the justice system, that this situation prevails. I want to say that I thought that we had a very productive meeting last Tuesday where certain decisions were taken, and I think those decisions were in the best interest of everyone involved. And for some reason, those decisions were reviled upon, and a different position was taken. And that position has now resulted in substantial uncertainty and confusion for the registry staff, for the attorneys at law, for their clients who are members of the public and whom we serve in this sector. There is just confusion
mm-hmm.
and no clear direction. I know what the intentions of various stakeholders are. The union wants to ensure that their members are, their staff is safe from risk. The bar wants to do a similar thing and also wants to protect their clients from the exposure to any risk that may be prevailing in the complex. The judges want to ensure that there's business continuity because their functions are important. I understand everybody's position, but we did appear to me to come to a common understanding that was in the best interest of all a week ago, and for whatever reason, which has not been communicated to the bar, that position changed.
Well, it seems that based on the discussions I had with four people within the court, four court staff, a lot of their concerns are about moving to Wilde, that is at the Attorney General's offices in Wilde, mm-hmm. as well as to the Lord Erskine's Sandford Center. They would prefer to do, those staffers and apparently some others, would prefer to work along for just a few hours a day and then move one time to Clico Building, which is less than 100 meters away, just behind the Supreme Court building. And I think that that's their concern. Of course, the union
also we're considering the inconvenience of having to pack up twice. That's what we're looking at. That is the basis on which we've
precisely. And I think that is what they are very very concerned with. The thing about it is
that they articulate, apart from just the inconvenience of it.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any other reason articulated why they would prefer to stay in the building that they walked out of? Two Wednesdays ago on the premise that it was...
Well, I can tell you what one female said to me, that, you know, they've been in there for that time. They've had the inconveniences. They want to get out the building, yes. But at the same time, she recognizes that, you know, they have a very important role to play. Just the same points that you made just now. And for that reason, they feel that it would be more convenient for the public, for lawyers, for judges, for everybody, if they just work a few hours a day while they're working in the safer parts of the building, that they can do that job. And once they're doing it there for just a few hours a day, they would help the public as well as the cleaners will continue doing what they're doing. That's the case that they put. I spoke also again to Roslyn Smith, the General Secretary of the National Union of Public Workers, who explained to me, but she reiterated yesterday that at the end of the day, if you volunteer your services like this and anything goes wrong with you, then the union really can't help you. They really can't defend you. So all the union can do is advise them not to go into the building, because the responsibility of government under the Health and Safety Act is that you need to have people have to work in a safe environment. But from a legal perspective now, what is the Bar Association doing? Will you be trying to convene a meeting with the Attorney General and the Chief Justice?
That is our intention. We as a result of the change in information that took place between Tuesday and Wednesday last, and notwithstanding requests for clarification in writing, the fact that we had not received any, we had convened a special general meeting yesterday to discuss how we were going to proceed in relation to what is happening at the courts. And one of the decisions taken at the meeting was that we would write to the Attorney General and to the Chief Justice and request that we meet before the end of the week, on or before Friday, to have some meaningful discussion on some proposed resolutions to some of the issues as they presented themselves, which would be in the best interest of all parties. I hope, it is our hope, that that request for that meeting would be met favorably and that we would actually be able to sit across a table from each other and come up with some solutions. We really aren't, we understand what the state of affairs now is. We understand that all we need to be focused on right now, all of our energies need to be focused on, is resolving those issues in the best interest of all users of the court in the shortest possible time. We may have to do a weighing exercise, weighing up how the inconvenience, how significant the inconvenience of packing up and moving maybe twice in a month weighs up against the risk of exposing someone to a catastrophic response to what is happening at the court. We don't have a full report yet of what the status of the building is, but we do have oral reports that whatever prevails does have the potential to cause health risks to the persons using the building. We can never know the extent of that risk. We can never know how the prevailing conditions in the court is going to react with anybody's pre-existing condition or anybody's predisposition to any sort of illness. And so the risk that we run in encouraging people to use the building is that we may be fortunate and nobody may have a severely adverse reaction, or we may be unfortunate and somebody might. And so, to my mind, that weighing exercise is terribly important. And I really was reassured and heartened last Tuesday that all of that exercise of weighing what was more important than the other had been completed, and had been completed in such a satisfactory way that real and immediate solutions in the short term were found, and that there would be a mobilization to implementation in the soonest possible time. I understand the staff's position. It is terribly inconvenient. I love to travel. I hate to pack. It is terribly inconvenient to have to pack up thousands of files and relocate more than once, maybe in a short period of time. I accept that wholeheartedly. But as I would have said before, the court is not the building. And those functions which the court carries out can be carried out at any location where the personnel is. And we had identified other locations, safer, healthier locations, for those functions to be carried out. And I think it is, and I will continue to say, it is in the interest of all of the parties. Because the Crown does expose itself to some liability for breach of the provisions of the Safety and Health at Work Act if they knowingly expose staff to a danger, a risk of danger. And so I do think that some regard has to be had to that. If the Crown finds a safer location for the staff so that the functions can continue from that location, it has undertaken its duty, it has fulfilled its duty to the staff, there can be no question of breaches of the Safety and Health at Work Act. Mm-hmm.
Have you been in communication with the National Union of Public Workers at all?
Apart from the meeting last Tuesday, I would have had some communication with the president last Friday when there was a change in circumstance, a change in decisions made at Tuesday's meeting.
Based on what both of you, sorry to cross you, but based on what both of you said, it suggests that you were not even made aware of the changes that were announced by the Chief Justice.
Well, interestingly enough, I got a call from a media house asking me to comment on the Chief Justice's statement. And at that time, I had not heard the statement. I had indicated that to the media house that I can't give a position on it because I haven't heard it, I haven't read it, I don't know what its content is, and that I do know that certain decisions were taken at Tuesday's meeting, and I haven't been, nothing different had been communicated to me at that point in time. So in answer to your question, we did not receive any direct communication, nor have we since. Well, not we, we meaning the bar, not we meaning the union and the bar. Mm-hmm. We have not received any communication since asking for clarification on Friday as to what the situation is. So our members have been attending the court. They attended on Monday, and then they would report back what transpired. Attended yesterday, reported back what transpired, that, you know, basically nothing can go forward, notwithstanding the willingness of the judiciary to work. Nothing is happening because of the uncertainty as to what is to happen, who is actually working, who is volunteering, who is not, who is sitting, who isn't sitting, where they're sitting, what is safe. There's just way too much uncertainty.
So as it stands now, there's nothing going on at the Supreme Court building. No.
Well, I can't say nothing is going on. I haven't been over there for the day, and I have not heard any comment from any members for the morning.
Okay.
So I won't come on the air and say that nothing is going on. I know that there is a willingness. There are judges who are willing to work from the court. You've informed me that there are staff who have volunteered to stay and work at the court. At reduced hours. I don't know if any work is actually getting done because those people who have volunteered to stay may not be those people who actually have to provide files and legal assistance services to the judges. They may be legal assistants carrying out other functions. So I'm not certain what is happening at the court at the moment.
Well, Mrs. Weeks, thank you very much for taking the time, and I do appreciate speaking with you now. Thank you very much and have a great day.
Welcome
back to Brass Tack on a wonderful Wednesday morning. My producer is Mr. Graham Vaughan. My production assistant is Mr. Kevin Hines. And I am Sanka Price, your host, and we go until 2 p.m. And we started this morning speaking with Mrs. Lizelle Weeks, the president of the Bar Association of Barbados. And three words we consistently heard from her was uncertainty, chaos, and confusion. Those are three words we certainly don't like to hear when it's associated with justice, but that is the situation that is existing right now. We go to our phone lines. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, and a well Wednesday to you, Sanka.
Thank you. Same to you.
How are you?
I am well.
Good. All right. I just have 2 points this morning. Mm-hmm. First, I would like whoever the ministry be. There's the Jersey Bar in, you know, Newton's Roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going from Newton to Coleridge,
mm-hmm.
there's a new hump in the road that was, I made that maybe 3, 4, 5 months that they had put there.
Yeah.
But at night, Sanka.
People can't see. Can't, yes. We reported it in the Nation newspaper.
It was?
Yes, we reported some months ago. And it is good that you're raising it again because I passed there the other night and you just don't see it at night. And
no,
it should really be painted with some sort of glow.
About three of us who were driving, the two cars behind and my car, I went upon it because it's black and you cannot see if it's that it is there. I didn't even know that it was there. So I am urging the powers that be to really put it either in yellow, put it in some significant color that at
some
night.
Some fluorescent color that reflects at
yes,
night.
That
yes,
that reflects that you would mm-hmm. know. You know, something mm-hmm. as simple as that. I would think that the people who put it there would have that intelligence to know to put it in a color. The next point, I am happy to know that the Barbados Youth Service are now trying to implement soft skills, which I've been speaking about for years, and not just focusing on hard skills. Yes, hard skills are important, but soft skills are now, especially in this day, are very, very, very vital, Sanka. Because the gentleman went on to say that when these persons, young people, go out into the world of work, they need, especially in the hotel industry, they need to have these soft skills. But I'm also asking them to add English diction and grammar to the program, because it's no point having soft skills and hard skills and you cannot use your English correctly when you're dealing with the public. So those are just 2 points I wanted to affirm this morning. Other than that, I would let other callers go ahead on.
Thank you very much. Nice hearing you. We go back to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on Brass Tacks.
Hi, good morning, Sankar. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, good morning to you. It's the first time you're speaking. I just making a call. I don't know if it's real or otherwise, but just a caution. On Monday, around 10 minutes to 2, or thereabouts, I received a call from the Cable and Wireless 1-800 number. A young lady who incorrectly pronounced my name, told me that she was calling because they need to get into my house to change the black box. I said, excuse me? She said, yes, you called to say your black box isn't working. You were having problems. So we need to get into your house to change the black box. I said, so when did I call? Hold on a minute. Well, I need to ask my supervisor. She came back. Somebody called to report it. I said, sweetheart, the only person who can call to report any problems with my phone would have to be me. Hold on. Oh, we have the technicians here. We got equipment here that we were able to check, and the technicians were able to check to see your black box isn't working. We need to get into your house to change your black box. I said, well, may I please speak to one of the technicians so maybe them and I can speak together. Maybe I'll be able to understand. I'm not as technically incompetent as I may sound. Hold on. No, the technician said that something wrong with your black box, so we need to get into your house. I said, sweetheart, until I can speak to someone who knows what they're talking about, I'm afraid that we can't go any further. All right, God. And she put down. And that was it. But the first question I'm asking, what the hell is a black box? Is she talking about the modem? You know,
yes, I suspect that, but at the same time, what I'm worrying about, you said it's a 1-800 number. Did the person have a Jamaican?
And it does say Cable and Wireless CWC com.
But was it a Jamaican accent?
No, it's a Barbadian. Okay? And she kept putting me on hold. It's not a Jamaican. And then yesterday, unfortunately, I didn't get that call. Close to the same time, this time the 246 number came up. But this time they left no messages. Now, I've had the situation, firstly, when dealing with Cable and Wireless, where I've always had a professional, and if they call and they get my voicemail, they would leave a message. Now, I'm calling because I want Cable and Wireless to hear this, because obviously it's difficult to call back Cable and Wireless and get any sense of talking to any normalcy in Barbados, unless you want to go in there and sit down, which I don't have the time, to ask them to investigate this. Because firstly, it's always between 1 and 2, and this lady clearly is being fed to be told what to say to the people. You know, and something about this doesn't sound right. And so I'm just putting Barbadians on alert, because this might be another scam where people are using the facilities of Cable and Wireless to get into people's house, unsuspected people. But I am not that, you know. So I'm just putting a warning out there, that's all.
Well, sir, thank you very much. You're really doing a public service here. And we'll certainly try to get to the bottom of this. We'll try to contact someone at CNW to find, well, from Flo, to find out exactly what is happening. Thank you so very much.
Have a dynamic day. Cheers.
Same to you. Bye-bye. We go back to the phone lines because we have a number of calls. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, just let me lower my radio so I can have a pleasant conversation with you.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Relation to that caller, there's also, I have another matter to talk to you about, but if people must be aware too, there's some person called, well, selling vacuum cleaners. And if they could come pay a visit to show you these vacuum cleaners. It doesn't sound genuine to me, but I think one must be very careful of these calls at this time, of people trying to access to your home by some way or the other. But they have this call with this vacuum cleaner. I tell you, God, so he can't afford a work, so I don't see why she wanted that vacuum cleaner. No. Mr. Price, I realize that after all of these months of promises, that this government has decided to go on an extensive road repairs program. For example, in the constituency of St. Michael West. I'm also aware that the material that they're about to use, I don't know if they cannot take the barber green or if what, but several of the pieces of machinery are stuck at the top of the gaps in almost two districts of this constituency. For example, in Knightsland, there in Lower Westbury Road. Massive equipment. I wonder if they are displayed there or what. But they've been there for a long, long time. But I want to ask this question.
We call it a long, long time.
Well, they were there over the weekend. Mm-hmm. That's last week. And today is Wednesday. So I'm averaging that they were there for since Friday, Thursday. And this means that thousands of dollars are laying up there in equipment from where you call the water scraped the road to the Bob Green to a roller. Anybody could go and see it. The press could go and see all the machinery laying down there at the bottom of Knightsland, Westbury Road. And there's another area. The question I'm asking, people are not fools. Residents are not fools. You come and you crab marsh an area. Eventually, when the wind falls, there is no preparation to stop that Barber Green from capsizing and going all down the road. There's no preparation. But I'm going to tell them some roads that need to be fixed in that area so that they will not fix some and not all. Because if they think within themselves that the people of those residents are so foolish that after all of these years that you have promised that they've got situations that need to be looked at. Take, for example, Upper Goodland, Third Avenue, Goodland. You could do sailboat racing in that area. You could, when we in fall, you put, I remember the little boy going to school at St. Leonard's Square, used to break some matchsticks and drop the matchsticks in the water. We used to race the boat. You can do that in Third Avenue, Goodland. And I hope that when this grading, I tell them the places that they should go, right? If they intend to feel like they're going to win the election by preparing roads, you can't prepare some and not all. And you can't just crab mash the area and expect that somewhere along the line, last time they picked the Westbury Cemetery. Last time they take the colors of Barbados and put all around the Westbury Cemetery. From the bottom to the top. Blue and yellow. I yet to see those colors come up again. There are several other things that should have been done, and this is not only in the West. You got a whole cleanup campaign going on over in the North, St. Michael Northwest, and the cleanup campaign, a lot of garbage still there to be picked up because you have not went through the right channels. You have not employed the services of the sanitation department. You brought in an independent person who in true fact is a beneficiary of what is going on because the person lives in the same. Nothing wrong with giving some person a job, but you cannot disadvantage people for sake of a vote. You cannot, Mr. Price, if these people don't be careful, right?
Yes, all right, you ain't gonna go down that road. You're gonna identify the roads that need work to be done.
All right.
So just continue.
Let me continue. For the sake of the residents in those areas, right? Mm-hmm. Third Avenue, Goodland. Rotten Town, Marine Square. As a matter of fact, when they come out the next slide, I might go in Marine Square. Right? Father's Land. Right? Tamarind Road up there in Eagle Hall. And I could name all of them. I'm saying that you cannot at this time, with hours to go, that you can fool people. You cannot. And Mr. Price, I'm very serious about this. Because having been around for a long time, you've made several promises. You had $100 million to spend on roads from St. Philip to the J.T. Banker roundabout in St. Lucie. You had a plan that you would fix the roundabout there outside of Price Mark. What is happening to all of these promises? What has gone wrong? Now you put in machines on display. I call the machines on display because it don't seem as if they could get the barber green. Because you scraped the road already. You got the road scraped. And I know barber green has been laid down, but the machines are on display. I am calling on whoever is responsible. And I feel for the contractors because they look like small contractors. And I hope that these small contractors are getting paid for the day's loss as far as equipment is concerned. If that is not the case, then I think that they're playing fun with these contractors. And I am appealing to all those persons who are now beneficiaries of road repairs. Go out and look at the roads. Ask yourself if this is what you want or if this is the election road. And if it's the election road,
somewhere along the line, you don't have a road. You have what they call a crab marsh affair. No. Other points I want to talk about in relation to what is happening to this country, and I am speaking on behalf of a Barbadian, a citizen, all of us. We have not had a date. No make sense quarreling about no date. The date will come. The date will come. The date have to come. If the date does not come, it means that we are going in a direction that we did not plan to go in. And I'm not going to say what direction that is. I think you will understand. And those of you who can read between the lines would understand that we have been following the Constitution. Over the years, that was a constitution that took us on the right path. If we are seeing a direction that is not what truly is ours, then we have to ask some serious questions. And I don't want those people who are committed to political party that because they feel the political party is to rule this country to condone that behavior. I want them to understand fully that if you say yes to what is likely to come, then you're going to have to live with it. We don't want that. We want to go back to the situation of a vote because that is your God-given right since 1951. We don't want no situation where, as far as I'm concerned, you find that you, because you are affiliated to a party, because you like a party, you say, well, let them do this and let them. No, no, no. You are giving away your sovereignty, you're giving away your right. So those of you who are watching the situation feel that it is supposed to be so.
All right, Mark, you've had to say. Have a good day. Thank you for calling. We have on the WhatsApp here, someone else is here saying that they also received a phone call. The person who is saying, good morning, Mr. Price. This might be a scam going on. A friend of mine had a similar call yesterday claiming to be a flow technician. She had no reported fault, but the caller claimed that they detected it and will need to access her house. So what I would suggest that if you get a call like this is that you somehow try to contact the flow offices to find out exactly what is going on. We will be trying here to contact the flow management to find out exactly what is going on to see if this is indeed a scam. Let me just do one more here on the WhatsApp before I go back to the phone lines. And this person is saying, what has become of the central bank's first quarter report for 2018? Is the governor not talking? Furthermore, what about the Inter-American Development Bank country approach paper for Barbados, which predicts that Barbados will go to the International Monetary Fund after the election? Quote, most analysts predict that after the upcoming election, the government will negotiate a program with the IMF to address the debt and the national reserves challenges, unquote. Would the Honourable Prime Minister of Finance or the Right Honourable Prime Minister explain the delay in releasing the central bank's first quarter report and come and publicly deny that the government is in negotiations with the IMF for a program to be dropped on us after the election? Sir or madam, I'm not sure who. First of all, the central bank governor is supposed to deliver his report on the first quarter on May 2nd. And there have been questions about the IMF report, Article 4 report, that have not been released. I think that we'll have to watch and see how that situation develops. And I'm sure, given the fact that the Minister of Finance and the Prime Minister are speaking more often now than before, that we will also be hearing something about these reports. So maybe some of the journalists will take it on and ask them about these reports as well. Rastax, another WhatsApp message is saying, I did receive a call like that. This is related to CNW. Then I received the next call saying I owed Flo and they wanted my address to send a bill. But what I did was I went into the Flo office and they told me to ignore the call. During the break, I was speaking to a management representative from Flo. The person said that that Flo is migrating the remainder of persons who are still on copper lines to fiber optics, but they would not say that that they want to get into the house to just change the black box. They would have given a full explanation. What is being promised to us here is that they will do a full investigation first, and then they will try to get back to us later today if not today, by tomorrow, certainly, to explain to the Brass Tacks family exactly what is going on. We go back to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning, sir. You're on the air, so listen to your radio.
Hi, good morning.
Oh, sorry. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. Uh-huh. I am calling to raise a concern about persons that were incarcerated. When they leave the institution, they have taken advantage of all the opportunities afforded to them. And still, when they come into society, they are not afforded jobs. They're educated. They've done all that they're supposed to do in programs. And still, when they apply for jobs, because of their police certificate of character, they're not allowed to apply. What happens to those people?
Ma'am, you're talking about a very sensitive issue, which is about prejudice, basically. Fear, prejudice, those are the types of things you have. The fact about the matter is if someone goes to prison for any matter, you have a stain on your character and people look at you differently, that you cannot be trusted. It takes a while for people to get past that. Some people, and I remember very well, there was an individual who was incarcerated, and after he came out of jail, he went to work as a driver, gardener and driver and whatnot for a very important individual in our society. Right? Could you lower that radio in the background? We're getting some serious feedback here.
No problem.
Okay. And as I was saying, and that person turned out to do an extremely good job.
Yes, please.
And I remember that person in a newspaper interview making the point that that man trusted him and he was forever grateful. So there are examples of people who would have been given that opportunity when they left prison and they did extremely well. Unfortunately, the majority of people are not that trusting, and they tend not to want people who were in prison around them. So it is a difficult situation, and that is why some of the skills that people who come up from prison, if they can use those skills as in some entrepreneurial venture, it would be much better. Because it's very, very difficult.
But becoming an entrepreneur, you can't get credit just like that.
You need a startup capital. You see, and this is the thing about, and you're so right. The thing about it is that we need to get serious about these things in this country, because clearly a program, if you want to stop the recidivism that goes on, you need to have a program in place where when a person leaves the institution at Dodds, where they've played their debt to society and they truly want to put that behind them and move on in a positive way with their lives, that you have some resources available or some other mechanism in place where that person can be properly reintegrated into society, into the economic life of the society again. And become useful citizens, because sometimes people make genuine mistakes and incidents occur and they have to be incarcerated because of that. Other people would have been very deliberate in their actions when they did their criminal activity, but they, after the period of incarceration, they want to change their lives and they should be given that opportunity. But we really can't continue in such a small society where we have people who want to make a change in lives find themselves being discriminated against, because that is what is happening.
Yes, because when they're looking for work, it's very hard, because every time you apply, they say you need a police certificate of character. Well, yeah. That means you can never get employment. And the people that do employ them treat them unfairly to other staff.
It's like, in what way?
Is that they're begging to be there. So no matter how good you perform, you still are treated differently to the other staff.
Mm-hmm. Is this a relative of yours?
Yes, please.
How has he or she taken that treatment?
She is very resilient.
Sorry?
It's a she. Uh-huh. She's very resilient. She has come back home. She has a job. But she wants to do better.
And she doesn't want to get involved in criminal activity again?
No, she doesn't. Mm-hmm. She was very young when she made her mistake. Mm-hmm. But she served a very long sentence. Her reintegration is still coming along. But she wants to progress. Working for minimum wage at a certain age does not help. Remember, you're behind. If you were incarcerated from a teenager and you come back into society and you basically have to catch up, because when you are in your late 20s, there are lots of things you would not have done that you should have done, lots of things that you need to put in place. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of difficult to put those things in place without proper employment. Like, you want to take advantage of all of what you would have learned in your programs, like insurance. You want to start looking at, you want to build your life like a normal person. But it's kind of hard because every time you apply for a better job, your police certificate character doesn't even make sense to play. People meet you. They don't know you were incarcerated. You present yourself well. But from the time you mention, well, I was incarcerated for this period of time or whatever, it totally changes.
Well, as I said, that's where the prejudice comes in, and it's a human thing. And it's very, very difficult to get people to change their prejudices. The whole thing is about family support and community support. That is the only way. And one of the other ways, of course, is if she works long enough with anyone who could be a character witness for her, or somebody who would have met her prior to, and someone influential who would have met her prior to her incarceration and now know her as an individual outside of prison, and they would have seen the change. If they can write a letter of recommendation as well, that would be very, very helpful. But the reality is that it's a prejudice. I mean, people don't discriminate against people for a variety of reasons, and a lot of it has to do with fear and ignorance. And, you know, it's wanting to talk about is another thing to change. But I sincerely wish her well, and I sincerely hope that yourself and others around her give her the sort of emotional support that she certainly needs at this time. All right?
Okay. All right,
okay,
thank
great.
You.
Thank you very much for calling. This is Brass Stats. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning. You're in the air.
Yes, Anchor. How are you?
I am fine, thank you.
Well, I heard that last caller speaking about the problems that ex-convicts really have, you know, in getting employment after they've paid the debt to society.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that has been a problem for a lot of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's very good to hear these things, right? I hear that this is a woman now calling on behalf of a woman, right?
Yeah.
But we know for years this is the problem of men, and sometimes it causes them to be, we're called repeat offenders, right? Sometimes it's only when the shoe is on your foot that you really want to come in. Anyway, that's not what you really call about. Sanka, there is something very serious that is happening after last night. They're called a vagrant or elderly person who's laid down there in Independence Square, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they got a group of young people who comes from around that Nelson Street, Pondside area, right? Beating these men, piling big rocks and cutting them up. And these things are very hurtful, Mr. Price. Very hurtful. I hope that the parents of these children, God, these boys is about between 12 and probably 16, right? And this is very hard to see what is happening to these people. You know, about 7 o'clock last night, right? A guy who drives taxi just came there where the taxi stand is. And he said, you know, he see these youngsters out there, and I'm going to bet you that their objective is going and beat at these men. You know, when he was walking, going to the Dunbar Street, you know, a fella walked behind me and tell me, the other old gentleman, you know, then just look up an old man out there. And there's something that is happening weekly. and I want to know what really is to be done with these type of things, because these things are very, very hurtful. I hope.
You said it's happening weekly, but this is the first time I've heard anything about it.
Well, this is the first time you're hearing it, because you see, it seemed to me that when people do these things to these people, sometimes they end up people on that, so no. I meet elderly people who has nowhere to live. I call them homeless people.
Yes.
And this is exactly what, and this is not now, Mr. Price, about 4 years ago, right? Down there by courts. Some of them beat up an old man, burst all the old man's face. The police came and said that, you know, they would see it from the cameras or whatever. But, you know, eventually one of those same boys killed one of them. One of the same of the group killed one of them from the group. And when we talk about this violence, you know, they've got some people focusing only on domestic violence. But we should be casting these things on violence in its entirety. And that is exactly what we need to do to be able to curb some of these attitudes and this anger that these young people got in them. And we can't look at violence in one form and one form alone. You get my point, Sanka?
Yeah, because violence and violence, period.
This is very, very, very hurtful. Because when you look at it, you know, you ask yourself a question at 12 and 14 years old, and they're on the street after 7 o'clock doing these type of things. They have to come from someplace. They come from, and the thing probably start just yesterday when it was 14 or yesterday. This is something that was happening, I tell you, a long time now, Sanka Price. And the taxi drivers in that stand by Independence Square, they are damn annoyed about it. It is happening too often where these men are being beaten. Sometimes laying down there sleeping, beaten out of the sleep. And I hope that the authorities are hearing that something must be done about this.
Well, I certainly thank you for bringing this to our attention, and I will see if we can get some information on that as well. All right,
thanks,
sir. Thank you very much. Let me just read this WhatsApp. Mr. Price, I agree with the caller about the roads. There, in Flagstaff, Clapham, they dig up the road, put a sidewalk, nothing more down, and all the holes make the road worse. And then this one, as a parent and grandparent, I am extremely concerned and upset about the poor transportation services on the Sturgis route. No ZRs should be on this route, but for the past 2 weeks, they are playing their trade up here. It is illegal. I pray that no one would get injured or killed as a result. On Monday evening, around 6:50 p.m., about 70 Grantley Adams school children were being transported from school because there was no bus. Who remained at school to supervise them? They would be hungry, tired, miserable, afraid, etc. I share the concerns of families whose hearts would have been in their mouths while they waited for their children to come home safely. I want the transport board to cater for the poor people's children who require these services no more than ever. And this person is saying, sir, we need to put the hangman back to work when these people know they will face the gallows, trust and believe crime will come down. Trust and believe me, crime will come down. And that's another perspective for you. We go back to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Not bad.
That's very good. What's on your mind? What would you like to share with us?
I want to express the little talk with Flo, with his office call.
Yes, go right ahead.
I received one last year, and the gentleman, the first thing he asked me, if I have a bank account, where's my bank number, that I want, he told me I ran, it's called from somewhere in Washington, that I want $1 million and a brand new Mercedes. You know what I tell him? I tell him, oh, what I win, take it and give me the charge, and I have my phone.
Good for you. Any person... Good, very, very good for you. So did you report it? Did you report this at all?
I didn't report nobody, though, but I didn't answer to him, Mr. Price. Because the next morning he called out, I said, listen, my gentleman, I don't want to hear you. You hear what I told you yesterday? Give the money to charity. Because he told me I've got to pay some stamp to get this money. I said, yeah, well, if I win $1 million, I still got to pay to get it. I thought I'm going to take the money, do all the transactions, and what left give me. They tell me they don't do it, so I said, I don't do it, so they don't hang up.
Now, that's definitely a scam, and that's one of those Nigerian scams or something.
But when it comes to the mallet, me, I'm a squad dog, but I got caught myself.
Fair enough.
Okay, thanks, sir.
So that's the only thing you'd like to share with us today?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, have a great day, huh?
Thank you, your moderators.
Great, man. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Good morning. It's 10:59. You're on the air.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, good morning. How are you today?
I'm very well. What about you?
I'm well. It's a wonderful Wednesday. It's a beautiful day outside.
It is. Mm-hmm. I want to just support the guy that called about the incident in Independence Square last night.
Okay.
I was actually there. It's the first time that I've experienced that. But other people that were there said it's a regular habit. These guys, there were about 12 of them. And they would say they range from 9 to 15, 16, that age group. And they just came and there's a particular guy they seemed to target. A vagrant guy. And they just took a piece of stick, a 2x2, and they struck him across his hand. And the people that were there said, yes, it's a regular habit. They do it all the time. So I took my phone at the same time and called the emergency number. And the lady that answered the phone said she would pass it on to the central station. So I don't know what happened after that because I left. But apparently it is a daily practice of these guys to attack these older, unfortunate people who happen to be in the square.
You know if anybody ever intervened in any way to deal with this situation?
I do not know. It does not seem that way to me because you know how these youngsters are and you don't know what they have on them? So people, I mean, there are about 9 or 10 of them. There are a lot of them. If it was 1 or 2, probably somebody might attempt. But with a whole group like that, there's the fear that they might have some sort of weapon to harm you. So people... but just keep off.
I see. All right, sir. Well, thank you very much for your information. As I said, we're going to follow it up here so that we can let the listeners know exactly what's happening as well. Thank you very much.